Hey guys, Pastor Justin Dean here with a special announcement. May 10th and 11th, we are hosting a conference here at Sacred City Church with Dr. Glenn Sunshine as our keynote speaker. If you don't know who Dr. Glenn Sunshine is, he is professor of history at Central Connecticut State University, a senior fellow at the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. He's an award-winning author. He's published all kinds of different books and articles and even chapters in other books on history, theology, culture, all over the place. He's widely published. One of his books, one of his most recent books that I've read is called Slaying Leviathan. And it's about how limited government and resistance in the Christian tradition. And he's going to be speaking on this topic on Friday night, and then he's going to be moving on into how Christian resistance informed the Declaration of Independence on Saturday. Let me just read a little blurb from his book. It says, "Christians first expressed these political truths under Caesars, kings, popes, and emperors. We need them in the age of presidents. Leviathan is rising again, and the first weapon we must recover in the longstanding Christian tradition is resisting governmental overreach. Our bloated bureaucratic state would have been unrecognizable to the founders, and our acquiescence to its encroachments on liberty would have infuriated them. But here's the point. Our Leviathan would not have surprised them. They were well acquainted with the tendency of governments to turn tyrannical. Quote, eternal vigilance is the price we pay for liberty." So he's going to look at the Christian tradition, the Christian Protestant tradition that helped found our country, that sparked, you know, that was created during the Reformation, and it goes all the way into the Declaration of Independence. It's a truth that we need to get a hold of today as our state, our government, our bureaucracy is ever expanding, and we want to educate our people on Christian resistance to tyranny. And so we hope that you can make it out. You can email us at the church. There'll be links going out on Church Center. There'll be links going out on social media. You'll be finding those soon. But please block out your schedule May 10th and 11th. We look forward to joining us here at Sacred City Church. Sacred City Life Podcast. This is your host, Pastor Justin Dean. This podcast is all about helping you follow Jesus in everyday normal rhythms of life. I've got two gentlemen on the podcast with me today. Guys, would you go ahead and introduce yourselves?
How's it going, guys? Alex Tate, Sacred City Youth Director.
Kevin Knorr, Counseling Pastor.
Okay, well, welcome back to the podcast. Today, we are continuing to answer some questions regarding feminist claims, and we're going to look at the waves of feminism that have happened over the past, let's just say, roughly 100 years. But before we do this, we're going to get into a little section on that Kevin found this week from a egalitarian blog on, quote, Christian feminism. So, Kevin, you want to tell us what's going on here?
Yeah. So I found this just doing some research. And so this lady is looking at the title of the article is called Power Dynamics Between Jesus and the Canaanite Woman in Matthew 15. And so in finding this, I was thinking about, we talk a lot about being cautious of the teachers that we listen to, right? Scripture talks a lot about being cautious of false teachers and testing teachers. And so looking at this, this was just an outright, objectively feminist teaching. And so it talks about how the problem with blog posts like this is that they tend to examine Jesus as just like you or me, right? He was a fallible human being, and that's all he was. And so they look at Matthew 15. That's the story of Jesus' encounter with a Canaanite woman asking him to heal her daughter. And basically asking the question of, okay, was Jesus in error? So they don't quite go so far as to say that he was in sin, but they get about as close as they can. And so in this blog, one little piece from here says, quote, "If there was one man women should consider to be our greatest ally and champion, that man would be Jesus. Jesus was subversive to patriarchy. He showed great respect to women and included them in his mission and ministry. Often he praised their faith as greater than his male disciples. Jesus engaged women in theological discussions and protected them from abusive practices. So I guess just first and foremost, how much would we agree with that? Was Jesus subversive to patriarchy?
Absolutely not. Because, again, patriarchy means father rule. And Jesus was 100% submissive to patriarchy and operated within a patriarchal lens. Mm-hmm. He says, the Father and I are one.
Yeah.
I do nothing that's not approved of by my Father. I say nothing that my Father hasn't approved. What's that saying? That's 100% affirming the Father.
Mm-hmm.
The Father of all, right? And so this is just not true. Now, could we say Jesus was subversive to a false understanding of patriarchy?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, sure. Yeah. Like again, the battle is over definitions. If you define patriarchy as misogyny, mm-hmm. or patriarchy is misogynist, then yes, Jesus was not a misogynist.
Right.
So then he would be subversive to patriarchy.
Right.
But that's not what patriarchy is. That's not what it was, is, or meant to be, right? Is misogynist. It's father rule. And if you bring that down into the family, it means the father leads, the father protects, the father's the head, right? And in a marriage, the father is the head, right? And the wife submits. That's the way things set up. The husband listens to his wife. The husband respects his wife. The husband loves his wife, mm-hmm. commanded over and over not to mistreat his wife, you know, all of these different things. So a biblical understanding of patriarchy, Jesus was not subversive to that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so can patriarchy go bad? Yes.
Yeah.
As with anything can go bad, right?
Right.
But patriarchy, rightly understood and rightly applied, is benevolent to women, mm-hmm. is good for women, mm-hmm. is good for society, is good for the home, is good for the church. And Christ worked within that system and affirmed that system.
Yeah.
He only did what his Father commanded him to do. And when he called apostles, he called men.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He's working in that patriarchal reality that God has called men to be the heads of their home and the heads of the church.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the requirements of these men is that they would be fathers. They would lead their home well.
Right.
And if they can't lead their home well, they can't lead the church.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a faulty understanding. Now, this feminist author, what she's talking about is when Jesus says, I've got Matthew 15 open here, and I'm just going to read from verse 21. Then Jesus went away from there and withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and was crying, "Have mercy on me, Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon." But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came and begged him, saying, "Send her away, for she's crying out after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." So this is a missiological reality here.
Yeah.
Jesus was sent to Israel, right? Mm-hmm. He wasn't sent to the nations. Right. He was sent to Israel. And she is from another nation, right? And he's saying, "I didn't come for her people yet. Mm-hmm. I came right here." Now, he's going to send his disciples to all the nations,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So this is a missiological question, and this is a timing question, all right? And here's what she does. "But she came and knelt before him, saying, 'Lord, help me.' And he answered her, 'It is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs.'" We would have to do some exegesis on that to understand. I mean, this is a racial slur.
Yeah.
He's throwing out a racial slur. It's not good to give the children's bread, meaning Israel's food. He came to feed Israel.
Yeah.
It's not good to give what was meant for Israel to the dogs,
yeah.
which is the pagan nations.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying, right? But let's just let that sit. To our ears, for sure, that's highly offensive.
Yeah.
He's calling her a dog.
Yeah.
Maybe something even worse, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, that seems very offensive. Okay? Yeah. She said, yes, Lord. Okay? First off, we got to see here. She affirms what Jesus said.
Yeah.
You're accurate in what you say. Yes, Lord. Yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table. All right? So in other words, yeah, you're right. You're sent to Israel, and you're meant to feed Israel first. But even the dogs get the stuff that falls off the table, right? Mm-hmm. And so even the pagan nations, me right here, I'm a pagan. Even my pagan nation, we can eat what falls off the master's table.
She went that crumb.
And then this is what, and then Jesus answered her, oh, woman, great is your faith. Be it done for you as you desire. And her daughter was healed instantly.
Yeah.
So the historic interpretation of this is Jesus was dead on accurate in everything he said. He was not misogynistic. He was not being racist. He wasn't being he was speaking missiologically and of specifically of timing. Yeah. Right?
Like speaking overall of what he was there for, right?
Yeah, his mission.
Mm-hmm.
His mission was to the Jews, yeah. Right? And then he expands that mission because God's mission is bigger than just the Jews, but it had to come through Jesus had to come through the Jews, minister to the Jews, be rejected by the Jews, be crucified in one sense by the Jews and the Romans. But, and then when he's resurrected and he's filled with the Spirit, he fills his people and he tells his people to what? Go to the nations.
Yep.
Right? Go to the nations. And so now in this, if we were to apply it here, go feed the dogs, go feed the, you know, the pagan nations. But, and she hears the rebuke, or she hears his statement of purpose and mission and his telos, and she says, yep, you're right. But I'm here, and I have faith, and I want whatever you'll give me, even if it'll fall off the edge of your table.
Yeah.
And he goes, wow, what faith? And he heals her. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the feminist interpretation, is that Jesus was thinking through a misogynistic lens. Jesus was thinking through a patriarchal lens, and women were dumb, and women, he had nothing to give women. And now this woman comes up to him and kind of rebukes him, and then he changes his mind, and then he feeds her, and Jesus here gets rebuked by a woman, gets instructed by a woman, and he's humble enough to receive the teaching from a woman and change his view on women.
Yeah.
Now, that's terrible exegesis. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's just terrible exegesis. That's called eisegesis. That's bringing something in that I want to be there and putting it in there. And it's dangerous on its face for egalitarian claims and for feminist claims, but I've heard this exact same eisegesis used by a quote gay pastor, which is kind of like saying you're, you know, a meat eating vegetarian. say that Jesus here is being rebuked for his racism, for his narrow viewpoint. And this woman, and this gay pastor says, Jesus was wrong here. Jesus was wrong, and Jesus was just another man, and he needed to be taught by women. And then he goes on to extrapolate that the church has been wrong, and that gay people, and that people, you know, you can be a gay pastor, you can, you know, homosexuals okay. From this same hermeneutic that feminists are using to twist the words of Jesus, now LGBTQ plus, you know, people and pastors are using this to twist to show that Jesus isn't the Son of God.
And by that logic, he's not a good teacher either.
Right. Well, he's not a perfect teacher. We don't see Jesus repent in this. We don't just see Jesus say, oh, yeah, you're right, I was wrong.
Right.
He didn't say anything. We actually see the woman say, you're right. Yes, you. Yes, Lord. Yeah. Yes, Lord. Like, correct. You're right. But even the dogs. So it's a horrible hermeneutic, and it's dangerous, but I think this type of interpretation is going to become more and more prominent as they're pushing their agendas, okay? Mm. And what it says about Jesus is that Jesus is just a man. Mm. He's not the omniscient Son of God,
right?
That he was subject to his culture like we are in the sense that, you know, his culture was patriarchal, so he was just going with the flow, right? And so, and here Jesus is being rebuked by a woman, now he's rising above his culture, and it's just, It's absurd.
Yeah.
Jesus was perfect in everything he did and said, right?
Yeah.
So he is always God. He's not like limited God here and needs to be corrected by a woman. That's not what's happening.
Mm. Yeah, let me read the conclusion of this egalitarian article. The heading says, if Jesus created space for dialogue, shouldn't also the church? Shouldn't the church encourage a kind of environment where there is dialogue between women and men, where there's an exchange of give and take and of learning and changing minds? Shouldn't the church be a place where it's both safe to challenge and safe to submit because there is no power over, only power with? If it could be that kind of place, not only would the patriarchy be dismantled, but also both women and men would thrive and the church's mission would get back on track, just as Jesus' mission did because of the challenges from a desperate Canaanite mother.
Oh, wow. This woman corrected Jesus. Okay, first off, dialogue. Jesus promoted dialogue all the time because he was the perfect son of God. He also dialogued with the devil.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So by that same logic, should we promote spaces to dialogue with the devil in the church?
Certainly not.
No. And the fact that anyone thinking dismantling the patriarchy is a good thing, I don't think has really studied what biblical patriarchy is.
They haven't.
Right? And there's one more point in that quote. Oh, the power dynamics piece. The power with instead of power over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what egalitarians want to do. They want, and even some quote-unquote soft complementarians want to do.
Yeah.
They want to say that the woman is, or the man is the head, then the woman submits. But there's no power there.
Mm-hmm.
There's no authority there, right? And so as long as he submits with what's been called servant leadership, so as long as he is soft and kind and does everything correctly, then I will submit to him, which isn't submission. Now, should he be kind? Yes. Should he be soft? No.
Right.
But he should be strong. But submission implies that there is greater authority or greater power in one place. That's what the head is over the body. So there's got to be authority that goes with it. So it's not complementarianism without authority.
Right.
It's complementarianism with authority. So yes, the husband does have authority over the wife. Now I know because we've been swimming in feminist waters and soft complementarianism and egalitarianism that we don't like that, but it is meant to be a benevolent authority. Right?
Yeah.
But it's authority. If there's complementarianism with no authority, then it's not true complementarianism. Because the Bible says that she's supposed to submit in all things to her husband.
Yeah.
Right? Can you break down what some of that authority would look like? Because there could be a woman out there, or you know, a relationship in the sense of, oh, I'll let him think he's doing all these things, but I have the real authority.
Yeah. Well, we know that's the case. We know that's the case a lot of the times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the battle. The battle is over rule. Like in Genesis 3 with the curse, you know, your desire will be for your husband, but he will rule over you.
Mm-hmm.
Rule is not just complementarianism. There's authority there. Now, first off, let's just say the reality is with that authority comes greater responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That God went to Adam, right, and said, what have you done? God went to Adam. Because he was responsible. He had the authority and he had the rule and he had the responsibility to lead his wife well, and he didn't.
Right.
And so God goes to Adam first, right? And that means I think that means in heaven, God's going to come to us first, mm-hmm. the men. How did we lead the church? How did we lead our families? You know, and we have a greater responsibility, right? And so first off, there's that kind of terrifying notion. And the Bible even says that if we don't treat our wives well, then our prayers will be hindered.
Mm-hmm.
Men's prayers will be hindered if they don't treat their wives well. What is that? It never says that to women.
Right.
It never says that to women. It says it to men. Well, why? Because we have a greater responsibility. We've been given an authority to lead. Now, it's meant to be a benevolent rule, a benevolent authority. But ultimately, the buck stops with the man.
Mm-hmm.
And so the man is the one that has the authority to lead the home. And again, I want to say I'm not going to say men should have that authority or men should lead or men should do this. Men have it.
Yeah.
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 It's just either a black hole it's negative. He rules and he's got authority with an iron fist and angry looks and sharp tempers, or he abdicates that role. He passes that buck to his wife, and now there's a giant black hole in the middle of the home where the authority is meant to be, and that's going to negatively shape his wife, her sanctification, the kids. It's gonna echo out from there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, men were created by God to lead, and when they don't, it goes bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And so that's ultimately what we're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, so go ahead.
I was going to say, talking about headship and submission, I have heard a handful of times the saying, well, yeah, my husband's the head, but like, I'm the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Right. How would you answer that?
Well, first off, that right there is a sin.
Right.
That right there is saying he is a symbol of authority, and yet I am what controls that authority.
Right.
Which by definition means you are the authority.
Right.
You are the one. So, and again, I think that's soft complementarianism. I think that's egalitarianism. I think it usually is underlying that is he's an idiot and I know what's best for our family.
100%.
And so I'm going to turn him whatever way I want. And you know what? The reality is that is true a lot of the time. That's true a lot of the time, that men are easily manipulated through nagging, through using sex as a carrot at the end of a stick. I won't have sex with you unless you do everything I want you to do.
Sure.
That men are easily manipulated, right? And so I think that we see that in the Old Testament with Jezebel and with different, you know, even the spirit of Jezebel, it talks about in the book of Revelation, that wants to manipulate, control through sex, through words, through lack of submission, that creates a rebellious spirit, and a man can be easily steered by his wife.
Yeah.
And that's a sin that needs to be repented of, and that will bring destruction. That will not bring the fruitfulness that God promises a fruitful home, a covenant home that's set up more on the line, you know, in the way that God designed, which is through patriarchy.
Yeah.
So man needs to resist that. But of course, again, that doesn't mean a husband, our wives are brilliant, they're beautiful, they're intelligent, they're emotionally connected in ways that we're not a lot of the times. And so our wife should be one of our chief advisors, probably our closest advisor when it comes to specifically in the home, right? How are the kids doing? What's going on? How's my leadership being received? What am I not seeing? And so we're not just talking about, you know, shut up, sit down, sit in the back of the bus. I'm driving this thing. I'm the man. I'm in charge. That's foolish leadership.
Right.
Right. That's not a wise patriarch. That's not a wise father rule. And so there will be a sense where sometimes we need to be appropriately encouraged and steered a little bit by our wife.
Sure.
Hey, did you see this? Hey, have you noticed this? Hey, what's going on here? Did you hear about this? And we need to take that information in, but we need to take it in a sober-minded, non-manipulative way.
Right.
We can't take it in like, if I don't speak up at this meeting, then I'm not going to be able to sleep with my wife tonight. I'm going to be in the doghouse if I don't do this. No, we, as a man, we've got to be able to say no to our wife.
Yeah.
When she's wrong, just, you know, like any other person, we've got to be able to do the right thing, even when she wants us to do something else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
that's good.
All right. Well, so this is just something that Kevin wanted to bring up because it is out there. It's going on and it's going to be pushed more and more in our culture. So are we going to jump into the waves of feminism, or what did you want to do?
That'd be next podcast.
Next podcast. So this is all we're going to do in this podcast.
Yep.
Okay. So short answer, bad exegesis from this person. That's called eisegesis, reading something into the text, not taking the truth out of the text. And overall, we need to reject these false teachers.
Categorically.
And when we have these questions, this is why it's sometimes dangerous just to Google something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Ask your pastors. I've got entire books on these topics. I've got answers to nearly all of these questions written by, you know, scholars that we can trust. And so if you've got these questions, send them in to us. We would love to answer them. We, of course, know Jesus was never wrong. Jesus never needed to be corrected. Mm-hmm. And he is the Son of God. And so we take what he says and we stand upon it. And any of these new fangled interpretations of Jesus, they're just fads.
Yeah.
They're fads.
Yeah.
They don't work. They're not true. And they'll breed destruction and confusion in the church.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, all right, guys. Well, that was a short one this afternoon. So hopefully you learned something from it. Hopefully it was a blessing to you. If you've got any questions, email me at justindean@sacredcitychurch.com. We love you. We're praying for you. God bless.